This is Space Cats Peace Turtles, the unofficial podcast for Fantasy Flight's Twilight Imperium.
Episode 342, 8 Player Games.
Music by Ben Prunty, featuring Matt Martins
and Hunter Donaldson.
Oh, how are you, Hunter? How are you doing? Are you doing well?
It's a crazy time. It's a crazy time. It's a big time, crazy time. It's a weird time.
Yeah.
You're moving. I've moved.
Yeah.
I'm getting used to, you know, I'm here by myself all the time, which is crazy. And it's nuts. And you know what? I want to say something real quick. This is just like kind of personal. Because it just feels like there's a lot of really good stuff happening, and there's a lot of really stressful stuff happening.
Yeah.
But I just want to say, like, Akira Toriyama passed.
Oh my god, don't do this to me right now.
First day of March, I guess, is when he died. And I just want to say real quick, I don't want to get, like, you know, too worked up about it. But if you don't know who Akira Toriyama is, he's the manga artist that created Dragon Ball. He is, in my opinion, one of the coolest dudes to ever be, and that he might be the coolest guy that has left the planet while I've been here. It's funny, I was thinking about other people that I think are just on that level, and the only person that comes to mind is Mitch Hedberg, which is probably like a good, you know, that's probably a good thing, you know, that I'm like, oh, okay, there hasn't been that many people that I feel like are like the coolest ever that are gone now. And I know, you know, we're 34, and I think we're like in the perfect age for Toriyama to have been like, so, you know, it's like, even if his work wasn't like directly important in your life, he was important.
Yeah,
like literally the day that I heard that he died, the day I read that, the first thing I did was go to get coffee, and I go to the coffee place near me, and the guy pouring my coffee is wearing a shirt that on the back has trunks on it. And I was like, oh, hey, man, did you hear about Toriyama? And he's like, no, what? And then I had to tell him, you know, what was I going to do? I wanted to connect with him. And that's how cool Toriyama is you can't go to your freaking coffee shop
without
encountering him.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, I just wanted to say real quick, because I noticed some other content creators that I like, I was like kind of looking to my betters.
Relate.
And nobody has said anything about it yet. And I just wanted to like maybe say, like, you know, man, it sucks. Like, and we're all, I see all of my nerds, all the nerds in my life, which as you can imagine is a lot of nerds, have all like kind of said their piece. And I just want to say, man, he's like one of the coolest guys ever. And it's a huge bummer.
I think it's really messed up that you would do that to me right now. I've cried 3 times in the last 12 hours.
Yeah, see, and that's what I'm saying. It's like,
I've cried for lots of different reasons, and you're just adding another thing on my list.
I know, dude.
I watched a video about Mandy Patinkin singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow this morning and bawled my eyes out. I've been a complete nervous wreck, and then Hunter's let's kick off the recording. Let's get let's get Matt's spirits up by talking about Toriyama passing away.
I'm just saying it's a tender time. You know what I mean?
There's so
a
lot tender, of man.
There's a lot of stuff going down, you know? And it's there's stress in the air for us. There's that, you know, there's that news. There's other stuff going on that we're not going to talk about that's like kind of more personal. That's all. It's just, I don't know.
It's
a crazy time. We're kind of frazzled right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I just want to say that. And I know a lot of the episodes have been starting like this, but there were other things that have now made it more
over the hurdle, I think. Everyone should go to Old Gamers Almanac and listen to our Balatro episode, is what I would tell everybody to do. If you need an energy shift from this episode.
That's even part of it. Like, go listen to that and then think about what I'm saying here. It's like, we're like kind of, this is like the craziest we've ever been.
Yeah.
I don't know, like collectively, me and my social circle are just kind of manic and just kind of all over the place.
Losing our minds.
I'm excited about a slowdown to be coming.
To add to the mania, Hunter and I both played 8 player games as if we needed that energy in all of this. And we're going to talk about, because we have never in the past, and we've really stretched these out, honestly. Like, these could have been like a slew of episodes that all happened in the second year of the show or whatever. And then like when Prophecy of Kings came out and unlocked 7 and 8 player games. And we could have done those two like right out the gate. But the reality is, Hunter and I don't like generally play the other player accounts. We don't care too much. Mostly it's like we really like how it feels at 6 player. Like we just strive for that. And we have the ability to get 6 players relatively reliably. So there's not like, you know, a lot of in-person groups. I get it. Sometimes only 3 people show up to your house. Time to play a 4-player game. Sometimes everybody wants to come over and play. Time to do an 8-player game. 8-player is the weirder one, though, right? Because how often can you get 7 other people to come play TI with you? I do think 8-player is kind of the diamond in the rough in terms of player counts, because it's just so rare to have too many people to play TI with.
Well, and I want to be straight up real quick. I want to say that, because I feel like people have made comments before as if they think that I just hate every player count except for 6. 3 is good. 5 is good.
Mm-hmm.
6 is the real one. And I just don't like 4 and 8 that much.
Yeah.
So
Well, like, and so let's break down why that is, because so we're going to try to talk about like the differences between 8-player and other player counts, but most specifically when we do these episodes, it's like, how is it different from the 6-player 10-point game? Like, what makes it different from the TI we are always talking about? And what I would encourage people to is, like, we're not going to cover every single thing. We didn't play a million 8-player games. I played 2 async 8-player games. Hunter did a stream just recently.
I played one.
We get our vibes from it from there. We're here to talk about our anecdotal experiences, but I think a lot of things can just be kind of inferred from like just kind of going, what are the actual mechanical differences of 6 and 8? Mm-hmm. And you can figure out a lot. And we're going to talk through a lot of that stuff, but I think we'll also just talk anecdotally. So don't think this is like some perfect comprehensive 8-player strategy guide, right? That's not what this is. This is a, let's take a look at 8-player and note the differences. And the absolute biggest difference, and it's the same difference that's in 4-player, is that we have 8 strategy cards. And in all other player counts, there is this little balancing act of some strategy cards won't be in play, which means we cannot rely on its economies. Sometimes politics doesn't get picked, so the speaker token won't move. Sometimes leadership isn't picked, so people aren't going to get command counters.
Yeah.
And in 8-player, it's never a question. Every single strategy card will be picked every time. And I think our vibe has always been, I don't actually like that. It doesn't actually feel good for everything to have access to. And I saw this in the pre-errata from somebody, and I wish I could credit you fully. I didn't pin it, so I'm sorry. But the thing that then actually means is not, oh, you have access to more stuff. No, you don't. You have the same command counter economy that you have in your 6-player game, more or less. But now you need more tokens, or you are enticed to potentially use more tokens, right? Realistically, you have the same number of things you're going to do in a 6-player game, but you have more feel bads. You have more times where it's like, well, I don't have the token to do the secondary of Imperial. I don't have the token to do the secondary of Politics or whatever it might be. It wants you to use more tokens than you actually have access to for most factions.
I don't know. I'm going to push back a little bit, because here's the thing that to me defines 8-player. Is that diplomacy is picked every round.
Oh, because true. You just have
because
money.
Diplomacy's there, it means that you have a lot of wiggle room with stuff like that.
Oh my God.
The economy of the game, I think, kind of blasts off.
Yeah.
In a way, it emphasizes to me my big, like, I'm probably just going to spend the rest of this episode basically restating this. So this is my top line. It emphasizes the parts of the game that I don't like, basically.
Right.
It overemphasizes that. Mm-hmm. It makes it even, if I feel like the game is a little too economy-driven, everybody's economy goes a little too fast. I kind of wish people were poorer a little bit.
Yeah.
8-player, it's ridiculous. And yes, you're right. You don't have more command tokens. You don't start with more just because there is... You know, so you're always going to maybe have this feeling of like, oh, I'm not following everything I want. But with Diplo in there, as long as you've got a decent slice available to you, you can follow a lot. I don't know. It's maybe a little too much that you get to do.
Yeah, and add to that, if anybody's ever played with me in round one when Diplo gets picked, I become a weirdo, like a freak. Yeah. That's just like I'm so scared of these. I've just been burned by the bad Diplo timing windows too many times, where I'm just like, I can't let this happen, so I have to get way, way, way ahead of it. I just get hyper paranoid, and the notion that that's present technically every round, although it's never as big of a deal, right? Like you can account for Diplo easier in later rounds, but I hate stressing about Diplo timing in conjunction with the other strategy cards. It drives me up the wall, and so that is definitely the other part of 8-player that's just like a little frustrating kind of experience, because it's just like, oh yeah, I feel like every round I'm like, oh yeah, Diplo, and I could have, or I should have, or I think I could, oh man, and this could have been the way that I spent the money. Like it's so many times I just feel bad for what I've done.
This is another one of those. This is another one of those really good, like, me and you situation where we're basically describing the same thing, but our emotional response to it is very different.
Absolutely.
You're over here being like, I could have, and I'm like, but there's a lot, you know, like I am looking at the options and saying, this is enough.
Right.
And you're like, but I could have done everything.
I could have maximalized.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I could have maximalized.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm over here, you know, just, you know, with my love of the Halfling's Leaf, you know, just kind of hanging out.
Well, can we talk about other strategy cards? I feel like it's worth going through kind of all of them and how they are affected by 8-player. I mean, I don't think, like, we've just talked about command counters, and that's the relation to leadership, more or less. Diplo and leadership have that relationship. We can talk about politics. Speaker order is supreme now. To talk about things that we don't like in the game, speaker order, choosing speaker cards, and how much that determines things that happen in the game. Guess what? You know what's bad? Going 7th or 6th or 8th all game long because there's speaker shenanigans going on. And I don't know how you get out of that. Like, I do think there's just straight up doomed players from the get-go if some of the other people want to get fancy with the speaker token all game.
Yeah, also, like, the fact that you can secondary so much means that if I can get my hands on the tokens, why do I even need to let the speaker go past me?
Yes.
Why not just stay in good speaker order? Or why not excessively make deals with my neighbors in order for us to... It's like, I started bringing up the TI3 trade triangle type stuff, which I had forgotten about. But, and I mean, it's like, we still have an element of that in six player. Like, but it feels more singular. It feels more like, you know, you're not really incentivized to go that far in cahoots because if you have that much, like, oh, we're working together, it's like you're also sort of deciding like who's going to have the best spot in round five, because we know the tempo of the game so well. Yeah. Like, it sort of de-incentivizes that. But this in 8-player, I mean, it is like you may as well. I mean, that's what I did. I have an 8-player game that I streamed. I'm going to go ahead and throw that on the YouTube this week. So look out for that on Thursday if you want any like kind of visual compliment to any of these things. Yeah. But I made excessive speaker deals. Yeah. Like I was constantly talking about it.
The incentive is just too high not to, because to lose speaker order is too punishing. It can just be too detrimental. You'll just be stuck with like construction or like trade in the late game when it stops mattering. Like you just get junk. And to your point, I love your point of in 6-player, the dichotomy is some things might not get picked. So you lose this incentive to play speaker shenanigans because sometimes you're like, I need tech to be in play and I don't see other people necessarily going for it in round four, so I need to grab it or whatever it might be. Like there's a bunch of those versions of that argument where it's because I need it to be in play. And in 8-player, you don't have that. You know it's there. You just have to time it out and afford it at that point. There is not a cost of, oh, the thing I really needed, construction didn't get picked at all, so I can't get the structures I need for the objective or whatever it might be. Like it's there, so you might as well just lean into the speaker game and be ready for it.
Yeah, it's not that hard to score with this much variety in what you can do.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Right.
And I feel like it ultimately makes the game less interesting.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it also slows the game down. We've got two extra players. We've got way more things to, like, listening to Matt talk about diplomacy and your frustrations with timings, there's way more to talk about, but there's the stakes aren't higher. You know what I mean? Right. Like, we could waste more time.
Yeah, you can just kill so much time. Yeah, I was about to bring up the next strategy card, construction, where it's the same thing of like, hey, so and so, when are you gonna pop construction? Okay, so and then when is leadership gonna pop? And everybody's just doing that every single round, all around. When is every single thing going to pop? When are we gonna do things? Construction. You know, structure objectives get easier in 8-player, right? Because you can always build a structure if you feel like you need to. There's no threat of it not getting picked. You can get the structures out. So that's, it's sort of interesting. It puts people in like a mildly more defensive position. There's generally speaking more PDS out there. Yep. I'm not going to overblow this point. It's not the biggest deal in the world. There's some people on the map, we'll talk about this later, that you just can't reach. So it doesn't matter if they have PDS protecting their stuff.
Yeah,
it doesn't affect anything. But
there are definitely players at the table that you're not going to really have anything going on with. Right. So
you're just not
going to
interact with. But yeah, I it does make structure objectives easier, which means there's like even less friction, right? Like these things are just like kind of just everything's a little bit easier. Everything's just a little bit easier because of all of the strategy cards being out there. It's never a question of if I don't do this, or if I do this, I won't be able to get this other thing. And an innate player, it literally is, as long as you can afford it, you can do it always, no matter what.
Yeah, and I don't know. Do we want to get into like faction stuff, or I don't like?
I want to burn. Can we just burn through the rest of the strategy cards? If there's anything else worth noting, trade is trade. Whatever. I mean, there's more money. There's more X minus ones going around. I don't know that trade is like wildly affected by this. Besides, there just being more total dollars out there in the world. Warfare is. Now the funny thing of, you know, Hunter, you've been on the push to like get people to stop picking Warfare, but now like Warfare's a guarantee round one. No. It's always there. You as a player can always hedge on building something in your home system. Like that's just a thing you have access to at all times. It makes plastic easier to get out across the board. Like people just get their plastic out, I would say. Tech is the other one that I think is the sort of most interesting different feeling, because you do have those games where people are like, I'm not going to prioritize tech. It's not common, but you know, you get round fours and round fives where there's no tech, right? And in the late game, I would say that's the biggest deal, and the biggest bummer is sometimes someone is one tech away from a tech objective, and everyone is just like, if we just don't take tech, we're fine, because the person that's one tech away from the tech objective can't take tech and expect to win. Because they'll be on the seven. They'll score too late.
Right.
But now, someone is doomed to get the seven, no matter what. And the tech objective is unstoppable. And the speaker order is everything. You just now you just have this a boring objective that is completely on lock. And you have the game. Like, you're just done. So then you have, like, an end game that is harder to break through.
You need to change. If you're going to make it work, you have to change the point situation. Which sucks, because I hate what I'm about to say, but like I almost think this is a time where 14 point makes more sense. I don't want to spoil the game that I'm going to put on YouTube, but the tempo, because Imperial is chosen every single round, the tempo gets kind of turned up, but bonus points are more important.
Yeah.
So it's not like the tempo's turned up for everybody. The tempo's turned up for like one person or maybe two people. And they are going to have a round four situation.
Yeah.
And most people at the table are not going to have a round four situation.
Right.
And that sucks.
Yeah.
Like that is kind of very anticlimactic.
And it's so much more of, can anybody even get over there? I don't know. I had a couple dumb 8-player games where it felt like the wormholes weren't doing us any favors. On Async, you end up playing with the Milty Shenanigans bot a lot. And I think that's all well and good, but I actually hate like the algorithm based Milty draft, because it always jacks up wormholes. I'm sick of playing games where the wormholes are really trash. And in 8-player, that's a death sentence. In an 8-player game, there are, and the wormholes are bad. If you have that situation, you know, where it's like, oh, there's only one alpha. There's nowhere to go from this alpha. And like the betas are out there, but two of those are like pretty close together. Okay. So literally the people on the other side of the table from me, I will not interact with, and I might be the person with the amount of plastic to winslay them, and I'm just not I just can't get there. So that these round four wins are so much more doable because everything's just so spread out. You would think if it's a great wormhole situation, which I would just tell people force the wormholes in. If you want to play eight player, every single wormhole should be on the map because you need that entanglement to be possible. Like you need them to be very well spread out, and it is to the detriment of your eight player game to not have every single wormhole out there. It's too much space accessible, and you need for people to be able to go through those wormholes and do something about their other players.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you need to make it's like the map is gonna be big, but you need to make it feel smaller, I guess. I also like hyperlanes are a really, I think, great tool.
Mm-hmm.
They are like maybe not quite my vibe.
They're not pretty. They're not. They don't make a pretty map.
And if you can, they're visually like kind of confusing at times. It's really hard to increase the amount of hexes.
Yeah.
And throw hyperlanes in there because it's like visually you're just kind of looking at a lot of nonsense eventually.
Right. Yeah. So we encourage people to do the hyperlane setup in POK where it turns it into essentially eight standard six player slices. You have a tile to your left, a tile in front of you, a tile to your right. You have one on your path to Mechatol, and you have a little equidistant to your left or whatever. That would be like the standard slice. And you can make that all work. It's just that it looks so confusing. It doesn't look like this. So you have to do a lot more. You know, really, really great players, they'll be able to figure it out. They understand kind of like how far they are away from things. But I mean, I even still sometimes, especially because I was playing mine async, so I'd have to like check back in my game every once in a while. I would constantly have to be like, wait, how far away am I from that space? I genuinely like don't remember two spaces away or three spaces away. And I would have to like always double check the math. And so then I'm like, you know, seeing if my Dread 2s with Gravity Drive can get where they need to get. And then, you know, every once in a while it's like, oh wait, no, that's not where I thought it was. That is further away. I can't get there or whatever. So it is messy. I think in person, maybe that's a little bit less of a deal because you're in it, right? Your mind stays on the game.
I disagree.
It's still confusing. Great.
I think even if you were in person, I don't think that you could. I think there's maybe even more opportunity for confusion because it's now we're just up against the amount of components in the game, the amount of visual noise that this game carries with it. Honestly, my proposition for this, I'm not really a map guy. Okay. Uh-huh. So like ignore this if you want, but I think that it just makes more sense to do the like old school building the universe in sections that are connected via wormholes because you just got to find a way to shrink it down in your brain as much as possible. And if that means I ignore that other universe. Like there's like four people in this one. There's four people in this one. And then like a centerpiece with Mechatol Rex. That's easier to keep in my mind. And also maybe easier to plan as far as like wind slay stuff is concerned.
Definitely. Yeah. I do in TI3. I feel like I, at least, and I think we played with the map structure a decent amount more. And in TI4, we've been pretty hard. I mean, we only play six player to stick to this, but I definitely agree that really what it comes down to is when you're going to play an eight player game, if you just for some reason have the folks to do it, you're already not playing like the tight, super cohesive TI. Like you're getting weird. Okay. Eight player is weirder. So why not be weird? Like why not lean into it and play with the structure, play with what you're doing. Like it's already going to be a dumb game, not only just for all the mechanical reasons, but you have too many people in the room talking. Yeah. Like it's going to be so weird because there's just way too much going on all day. Seriously, all day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's just have a dumb game. Like let's just lean into the stupidity. And I think you will have a way better time, and hopefully things will go faster too, because if you wanted to get really in the weeds in an eight player game, you're gonna be here for 14 hours. Like it's
you're
just
gonna be here forever.
It's gonna take way too long.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there should be a 9 and 10 strategy card. Mm-hmm. I think take it all the way up to 9 and 10, and you know what, and have them in six player too, you know. And that's what I say.
You just want to like have a ton of strategy cards.
What about this? What about two strategy cards that decide who the speaker is? What is that?
And they're just this gross chicken game of chicken every single round of how you
Yes.
The two it's two strategy cards that both do speaker. You both pop them and then you have to do a duel on like a third tile. Like
a
you guys
duel.
Have a
yeah.
you go and do a little combat and the winner gets speaker. So you, when you pick when you pick the thing, you are just opting into the choice of pot or the chance to get speaker token.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's that'd be my game, you know. That'd be how I do it. But you know, whatever. Nobody asked me. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Yeah. Winslay tough to do.
Well, because it's everything's too spread out. There's the objectives are too easy. Like it's like there's just not even there's a thing that happens in TI in general. This happens in six player, which is sometimes the game is the horse race, right? Like sometimes you want there to be a Winslay carousel, but one person doesn't have the incentives they're supposed to have, and it just is going to muck everything up. I would say that is nearly a guarantee in eight player that someone's not going to have the incentive structure to really pursue the Winslay carousel, and that level of entanglement is like really hard to accomplish already, and now it's functionally impossible in eight player game. There's going to be maybe even two people that are just like, oh, I don't care anymore. I'm out. And I'll just sort of, I'm just going to start handing trade goods around or doing really weird stuff.
Yeah. You know how many, I mean, yeah, that was a factor in my game. So like the end of it sort of happened very sleepily.
Yes.
If that makes any sense. It was sort of like, oh, this game is going to be over. And it would have been apparent had anyone stopped and looked.
Right.
But it wasn't really fair to expect a lot of people that were not in the game anymore were literally like, well, there's no way you win to like keep their eyes open like that. You know, it's just like I feel like in a standard game of six player, you might have one player that's out. Maybe you have two players that are out. And that kind of sucks. In eight, we're talking like minimum three players just not
half
in the game.
The table is not engaging with this. They're like, I'm like eighth
so
pick
much.
Next round. What do you want me to do?
What do you want me to do?
What are you talking about?
I saw somebody that in my game, because of speaker control, which was my fault, by the way, but I was playing right, in my opinion. there were players that were like eighth and then seventh and then eighth again.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Right.
Don't do that to somebody.
What are you supposed to do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and even if we have a Winslay carousel. I'm eighth in the carousel. I'm actually not in it, even though I'm in it. To the idea that I'm gonna slay seven other people is a joke. Like I don't
have ridiculous.
Only people like Humble Checkmate before he had a kid has that level of tenacity, right? Where it's like I'll do anything to win. I'll go crazy to win.
Humble couldn't do that. There's no way. No one could do that. The meta couldn't do that.
Right.
The meta could not pull that off. And that's no shade. I'm not shading anybody.
It's too,
the meta,
it's too
if
much.
Anybody could do it, it would be the meta. But even the meta, I don't think, could do that. There's just no way to do that.
Yeah, it's such a tall order. And so then the game becomes, again, the game becomes goofy and stupid. And just let it be that. Let it be goofy and stupid. Who cares? Let's talk about the factions. Hunter, which faction do you think changes the most in eight player?
Well, hey, I'm going to have a little bit of solidarity with my good buddy Tautology is what it is, and say Nozroka kind of sucks. In eight player. It's weird because it's one of those things where you don't think about it until you start playing and you're like, how is Nozroka supposed to get all the fragments?
Yeah.
There's eight players now,
right?
And that's just more exploration that's happening in their hands and in their pockets,
right?
And so you have less control over the exploration deck. Six players is like kind of the perfect number for Nozroka to kind of play, you know, roulette, like to kind of go to the casino. And those two extra mean now it's just a little bit too wobbly. Mm-hmm. It's not as easy to like really get control over it. So I didn't expect that, but it's interesting.
Yeah. I think maybe not most changes, but I do think Hakan has an interesting relationship with eight player. There's two things going on at once with Hakan. The first is that like every single strategy card is being picked, right? Which means there's no functional way to block quantum data hub node. If Hakan gets QDN, every single round that they have QDN and can afford to use it, they can get exactly whatever strategy card they want. No matter what, they can get whatever strategy card they want. And because tech is always in play, You cannot stop Hakan from getting Cutie Yen. There is nothing you can do.
They don't
do.
Even need to skip now. Yeah. They can just
they'll
do
just
it
get
slowly,
the tech. They'll just get there. And so, I mean, honestly, if we're talking strategically, I also think Hakan should do this. Like, I think it's worth it to just go for it. You should also be, like, investing hard in plastic. Like, you should prepare to be the enemy of the table.
Yeah, because they should eliminate you.
Everyone should be so mad at you that you die. Yeah. But if you can protect yourself just enough, yeah, man, you just get whatever strategy card you want every single round. Like from as early as round three onward, basically,
right.
If you really push for it, if you take tech at least once yourself, like, you're going to get there. So I just think that's gross. Like, it's just really gross what you can do to the game in mm-hmm. that setup. Not fun.
Yeah, I played as Mintak, and Pillage is pretty cool with seven possible Pillage partners. Yeah. But it's kind of a win more situation. Didn't really get me anything. And in fact, I ended up researching mirror computing, which I think was stupid because I just had so many trade
just
goods
more
than
you
that, like,
even
who
needed.
Cares? But so, I mean, more players, that's more pillage opportunities.
Yeah. As long as you can get out there, right? You have to set up for it a little bit. Like, again, like we said, the map is so big. There's there's some people that you just don't become neighbors with, like, in the game.
Well,
but,
I mean, with guaranteed Diplo and tech round one, Cruiser 2 was not hard to figure out.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
So having Cruiser 2 from the beginning meant I could get out there and I could pillage.
Yeah, wow, that is interesting. Man, oh, man, Mentak with just a green skip in slice in an 8-player game. You are guaranteed Cruiser 2 round one. People to talk about extra. I think there's a consideration there, but I don't want to blow it out of proportion. The whole point being, Diplo's picked every single round, which means Extra always has access to peace accords. They can always take over a planet adjacent. It's really more that they're the other opponents. It's not wise to leave planets naked in 8-player if Extra's in the game, but it's once per round. They gotta be there. They gotta be adjacent. There's a lot of space you gotta be, not just adjacent to. In Hunter's case, Mentak, I gotta go park a cruiser somewhere. Extra's gotta go control a planet somewhere to then make it go to more places.
Uh-oh, Molly's on the show now.
I don't see your water bottle in here.
Molly, the water bottle's not in here.
Yes, hi, Molly. Hello, hi. So, Extra is fine. I don't think it's a huge deal. And beyond that, too, I just think it's like the money becomes a funny thing. Diplo being picked every round outside of peace accords. If they can get a good slice, that's obviously really good cash for them. You know, if they've got Lure to Four or something like that, you know, flipping that, spending it twice around, it is definitely a lot. Like, they can get an incredible plastic situation going.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's a little bit everybody. I think a lot of people will be keeping up with that relatively well. So I don't think Extra is, like, wildly different.
A lot of Windslay abilities kind of break down a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of them still work. Like Nomad's Hero Parade, like, kind of is, I would say, pretty limited.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, yes, you can still use the ability, but whoever you need to Windslay might be so far from you that it still doesn't really matter. L1 still works. It is almost more interesting in an 8-player scenario where it's like, all right, we're warping all the way over here.
You can teleport anywhere. Yeah.
Which is cool. Benediction, I think, absolutely still works because that doesn't really care. But I think overall, like, a lot of that stuff kind of breaks down for me.
Yeah.
And the idea of you being able to Windslay someone that isn't your neighbor is, like, maybe a little too much. I mean, it's already almost too much in 6-player, but in 8-player, we're just making that problem worse.
Yeah. Mahawk also has a funny little, you know, their commander, or not commander, like, they can get stuff in their fleet pool.
Sure.
But again, you gotta go attack everybody. Like, it's,
yes.
I wouldn't say it pops off or anything, but if it's a crazy faction mix, right, that is that many more commanders that Mahawk has access to. So there might be games where Mahawk is like, oh, I need to go fishing for tokens because it's just gonna pay off too well. There's too many good commanders in this game. Whereas in a 6-player, there's 5 other players. 2 or even 3 of them might have a bit of a bunk commander where it's like, yeah, I don't need to go do that. But in 8-player, there's probably 4 commanders worth getting that are going to, like, really elevate them as a faction.
Absolutely.
A decent amount. The biggest one to me, actually, though, I think the largest change, and it's not for the better, is Necro, because Necro's already pretty rich, and we're already explaining how they just get richer, and tech is always picked and leadership is always picked, and they always get to do both of those, and they just like have all of their tokens on the board every single round, and they have a home system that's hard to take, and the Windslay Carousel is already messed up, so people have less incentive to attack their already well defended home system. Like, and they, and like, because tech is picked every round, everybody's always researching tech, which means you have so much stuff on the platter. You have a smorgasbord for things to go get. You'll absolutely get 2 and 4 colors. I think Necro just like coasts into wins in 8-player.
Yeah, I mean, the Necro, well, I won't even spoil it. Check out, if you want to see what happens with the Necro in the game that I'm going to post on YouTube, it's pretty insane. And yeah, bit pretty ludicrous, ridiculous, and very scary, and beautiful. But, and I think the likelihood of Necro finding a broken combo with more factions at the table is just more, right. You just increase the likelihood of that.
Definitely.
I don't know, this is a really negative episode over here.
We don't like this episode.
It's really negative, and I'm kind of already sick of it.
I'll say some positive things that you will not be able to relate to, Hunter, because I do think 8-player is an interesting thing for async. Because honestly, there's a little bit of all of this mentality already in async, or at least a lot of the async games I play. There's a lot of breeds of async out there. There's a lot of people who like, they knock out async games in a couple of weeks. They're all very, very like in it the whole time. But I play a lot of asyncs that are like super breezy. It's like a chill kind of, a little bit more cooperative version of Twilight Imperium. Because
it's kind of lo-fi hip-hop.
It's lo-fi hip-hop TI. And 8-player... there's even more of just like a, you forgot what was going on the other side of the table. Well, in 8-player, you definitely forgot what was happening over there. You don't even know. Yeah. You forgot what factions are over there. You know what I mean? You forgot who else is in this game. A username pops into the chat and you're like, oh, I'm playing with James K. Polk. I forgot he was here. And I'm Jolnar and he's Necro. And we haven't been engaging with each other almost at all game long. Like, you, it's kind of a fun little, oh, that, a little surprise. And I do think it's at least like interesting. I don't think it makes for incredible TI games, but as an async thing, you don't really feel the bloat of an 8-player game because the game's going slow kind of in general, I would argue. Obviously, slow players, like it will slow the game down, but I just think in async, you've accepted that the game is slow, so it takes as long as it takes kind of. And I would play more 8-player games in async. I won't aim for it, but it doesn't drive me crazy. Where it would drive me crazy is in person when I really wanted the day to be under 8 hours, and 8-player is going to make that really hard to fit into 8 hours without like really like everybody pushing to go that fast. Whereas in async, I just don't feel that drawback so much, and I don't. Like, I haven't had wild Windslay carousels in general on async. We've had a few, but more often you have a little bit of a coast end game on async in my experience. I'm sure there's async players out there that are like, what? No way. Everybody's super cutthroat. Like, there's definitely they don't have a name. They don't have the Euro Morning crew because that doesn't exist in async. But there's the cutthroat async players. And I have no idea what their perspective on 8-player would be. I don't know. It's such a different beast.
I think that the thing about 8-player is it's bigger than 6, but it's not like 15-player or 25-player or like maybe what we need is to go even bigger with it. and maybe that all like maybe 8-player would be cool if it was more like a mega game, if it was like Watch the Skies, Twilight Imperium.
Do something huge.
I think that would be cool. I'd have teams of players. You have like one that's like more political, one that's like science, and one that's like war or whatever. Yeah. Just throwing that out there as like a thing. and it might be cool to do that sometime.
Yeah.
It would require like, you know, probably, you know, space and money and time. But that might be cool.
Yeah. I honestly, at this point too, still just advise people like on that end of like, make it a weirder, dumber game. If you're going to do 8-player, we said it in our Alliance episode a long time ago that if you have that many people, a way to save some time is to just make it an Alliance mode game. There's the Codex 2, Codex 3. Which one was it? Codex 2.
I don't even know.
Calera's was Codex 3. So Codex 2 has Alliance mode in it. Pull up the rules for that. They're a little bit jank. They're a little bit rusty. They're a little weird.
Oh, yeah.
But you're about to play a weird game. And I have this note here about alliance mode that says you can freely trade planets with your alliance partner, and then that maybe it's up for question whether or not you can or cannot. It's hard to say when you can swap planets with your alliance partner, and I don't think we have clarity yet from the rules of whether or not it's okay to just do that. I don't think I've heard from enough people yet of whether or not you can swap planets with your alliance partner in alliance mode. So we'll have to get back to that and see what the answer is later.
I'm not laughing at that, and I'm not going to laugh at any of the people that play into that either. That got no laughs from me, and that will not get any laughs whenever inevitably the people in the comments repeat that joke. I will not be laughing at you either. I will be frowning. I'm frowning at Matt doing that for the billionth time, and I'm frowning at all of you who I know are going to do that. You are getting big frowny react, okay? I wanted to have a nice time, all right? It's kind of it's a crazy time right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're doing that to me.
Well, I'm sorry to all the 8-player fans out there that we came out here and dunked on your whole thing. Dunked on you and your friends.
Get less friends. That's the problem, is you have too many friends, you loser.
Yeah.
We've got a really interesting thing to cut into now.
Yeah.
We've got Tactic Blue is going to come on to promote Discord and Stars.
What?
That's going to, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Discord and Stars. It's been long awaited. And then after that, I am going to be in charge of the rundown.
Just whatever else happens. I literally have to go. I still have a house to pack. I have to put all of my things into a truck tomorrow. Well, sorry. Yeah. Actually, if you're listening to this, send me a nice message because I'm driving my truck today. I'm driving my truck today, if you're listening to this episode. And I'm nervous about it, okay? I'm nervous about all this stuff that's happening, and I just could stand to have a nice thing said this week. I love you, and maybe you love me too.
Okay. Well, and when we're back after the Tactic Blue thing, we're going to do a rundown, and I'm in charge of it. It's just me, and I get to do whatever I want with it. So get yourself ready for the fun down.
Okay, we're here with Tactic Blue real quick because there's stuff going on. Listen, we hear you. We get it, okay? Listen, everybody, listen.
People have been yelling.
We get messages a lot about this thing, okay? This little thing happening in the dark recesses of the community. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not dark recesses at all. It's like way out there in the open. We're here with Tactic Blue to talk a little bit about Discordant Stars and very specifically what's kind of happening with Discordant Stars right now. So hi, Tactic.
Well,
how are you?
Explain to our audience what Discordant Stars is.
Yes.
Because I know the freaks are here and they're listening and they already know what it is. And this isn't even for you freaks.
Yeah.
This is for all the people that don't know what Discordant Stars is.
So yeah, sure. First off, hi.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Of course.
To the extent that Cages hasn't already told everybody about what Discordant Stars is, it's a homebrew faction pack that just adds 34 factions, no new rules to the game.
Just
34. It was like a little project, just kind of a light little thing you pulled off on lunches, you know.
Yep, so we've been working on that for a couple years now, and there's now a group buy to buy in and get your own personal set from the factory while we all order.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't cost us $10,000 each to custom prints.
Right. Yeah, so the way it works is you all are printing physical copies of this. This is not some sort of for-profit scheme. Y'all are getting everybody to join up together, pay the manufacturing costs of getting this thing to look really nice, and the more people that get in on that, the cheaper it is for everybody. So how do you have a rough number of how many people are like getting in on it already so far?
Yeah. What's the numbers right now?
Just crossed 700.
That's nuts.
Nice.
just this last weekend, I think.
Wow.
And the current cost estimated per set, including international shipping, comes out around $185 US dollars.
Cool.
But as people come in, that will
drip
lower.
Up a little bit more.
Exactly. Yes. And that's also, Bradley's being very conservative with that estimate.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we avoid any unwanted surprises from people or from, unexpected events.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
So to talk just briefly a little bit more about, like, this. I mean, you couldn't give me a breakdown of all 34 factions, but in general, what's the flavor of everything that's kind of included in the set?
I have a hard time thinking of where to start on that
makes sense. Maybe it's too broad of a question, but these are factions that y'all have been making for forever. I mean, we did a stream years ago where Hunter played some of the Tactic Blue factions, as they were called at that time.
Yeah.
And you've been testing more or less these same factions since then, right?
Yep. Similar factions. So they, So that pack kind of got rolled into Discordant Stars. A lot of that kind of got cannibalized for other people to do their own factions.
Because
I eventually do reach my budget on how much creativity I have for factions.
Yeah.
If that pack wasn't obvious. So it made more sense to have a lot of people on the pack.
Right.
Doing their own thing. So there's a lot of ideas there. Every faction I would like to think has their own unique identity, their own flavor. So,
yeah.
Where can people go if they want to see, like, the factions or, like, what the specific content that is included in the box is?
Yep. So there's currently now there's some people working to get it on the wiki. So the official TI wiki has a subset forum for like all of the new factions that are all marked as unofficial content. So hopefully no one gets confused there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there's also the Homebrew Hub, which is a Discord server that recently got reorganized. So it's hopefully a little bit more accessible than it has been previously.
And I know they're available on Async as well. So people could, if you're Async players, like, you can just start a game with Discordant Stars and check it all out as well. So they're definitely very accessible. They're in TTPG as well, right?
I believe so. I think those still need to be updated to the most recent version. And I forgot to mention that all the files are available online for free because that's how this whole process for fan content works with Asmodee.
For sure, to keep it legal. Amazing. Well, so there's not a deadline yet on people joining in on this, although there eventually will be, but suffice it to say, you know, as of listening to this, as of this episode releasing, if you want to get in on it, you probably should start jumping on it, you know, now, and then eventually Bradley will have to close the signups. I think the idea was that it's just waiting to see if it slows down. But at some point, you know, people are going to want their orders. So I think you told us maybe April 1st, but could push a little bit longer. But, you know, people should be trying to get in before the summer is what it sounds like.
I will say that April 1st deadline's kind of been promised to a lot of people who've been waiting for this for a really long time.
Right.
So
let's shoot for April 1st. Why don't we aim? Why don't we stick to an April 1st? And you know, if there's stragglers or whatever, you know, that message Bradley Sigma. Bradley's the one organizing the actual buy. Tactic's a big part of this project. Both of them can be reached out to. You know, they're on our Discord, but then, like they said, go to that Homebrew Hub or whatever to get.
Yeah, go to Homebrew Hub, people.
We'll link it in the show notes and everything. And Tactic, thank you so much for coming on. And people have been pining for us to at least say the words Discordant Stars on the show for like a while. So we just appreciate you coming on to like give details. You know, we otherwise wouldn't necessarily just pull out of our faces on our own. So thank you.
I appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
All right, and welcome back to the Rundown, aka the Fun Down. Matt is not here, so don't worry about it. I want to thank our Weird Bears, Big Al Cappuccino, Squeamish Emu, Brass Bird, Cabal of Soul, Kaluan, Daryl, Drago Thaxton, Elspeth SC, Carnal, Alice, Imlachevsky, Nick, Absol, Rwise, and Tang. And I want to thank my baby child big friends, Kraken, Jadim Jedi, Portmandia, Relic Stan, and Vince. Please rate this podcast please rate it anywhere. I don't care where you rate it. Just rate it to tell somebody that you know. Just talk to somebody and say, hey, 5 stars for Space Cats, Peace Turtles. And if you have any This Imperium life stories, please send them to spacecatspeaceturtles@gmail.com. I have a little bit of Patreon business, and I'm not here alone, which means two of my friends are listening to me do this business. But we're going to get through it really fast, okay? Weird Bears and Teensy Sprouts, the shirt orders have hit a slight snag. But I got everyone in to the order as of today. If you happen to decide to join the Weird Bears this week or today or tomorrow, I need you to message me on Discord the second you do that, because I could still maybe get your shirt order in. Otherwise, you won't make it into this order, and it would be kind of silly. It'll be a long time before you get your shirt, which, you know, sounds kind of lame to me. Teensy Sprouts, I still need some of your addresses confirmed. I've emailed and Discorded all of you, but luckily you have more time, as the pin factory generally takes a while to manufacture the pins. So next time you hear from me at all, it will be mailing time, and it will be an exciting time when you'll all get your things. Homebrewers Guild, this last episode, I asked if y'all could help design a proto X89 bacterial weapon tech for the custom Lazax faction that we've been doing. And I got some submissions that I want to throw in here. First is from Mantis, who just said, I want some sort of targeted bombardment where you produce hits during when you produce hits during a bombardment roll, you assign the hits instead of your opponent. I actually think that is quite smart, because that combos well with X89, because you can get the mechs out of the way. And just in general, we'd rather use our bombardment on mechs than we would on infantry anyways. And Cat has a submission, which is called, hilariously, X69 Bacterial Weapon. That's good, right? That's good. This is, as an action, choose one planet that is controlled by another player in a system in or adjacent to one of your cruisers. Roll one die for each infantry on that planet. For each result of 6 or greater, destroy one of those units. I like the connections to Plague. I also like that it's a stall. It's interesting. It's maybe not, it's maybe a little dry, I would say. Like, it's not that crazy, but I think it's likely that something like this is actually what we end up sticking with. And the last submission is, of course, from Wecker, who kind of went nuts and submitted something that isn't even quite, it's like in the spirit of what I asked for, but it's a little bit different. This is called Mass Drivers. It is a custom PDS unit. So there's going to be Mass Drivers 1, Mass Drivers 2. Mass Drivers 1 is, during Space Cannon defense, you may use this unit's bombardment ability as if it were Space Cannon. And it has a Space Cannon, of course, as an ability. It has Bombardment 6 and Space Cannon 5. That's kind of interesting. That's definitely outside of the box. The upgrade is Mass Drivers 2. With the same text, you may use this unit's bombardment ability. Whoa, okay, sorry. Never mind. The text is slightly different. You may use this unit's bombardment ability in adjacent systems. And then it reads, during Space Cannon defense, you may use this unit's bombardment ability as if it were Space Cannon. It's got Bombardment 2 on a 6 and Space Cannon 4. Very interesting, as Plasma scoring, I think, procs twice on that. And then Galactic Counselors, you have your poll up. But that's all the business that I have. And what I want to... I want to welcome two of my friends onto the show real quick, just to have some fun. Hell, can we bring on EJ and Son Sanders real quick?
I don't know what this show has evolved into. I don't know where I am.
You haven't checked in a while.
It's been a minute.
I like what I heard. I don't understand anything.
I don't like it. Yeah. I don't like what I heard, actually.
I like the building stuff, and there was some funny names.
Sure, yeah. I like the funny names. I like X69.
Always love hearing about Absol. Always loving that.
Yeah. Absol's still around. Person. Still kicking
one of the
it.
Good people. One of the many good people in this community. So.
Yeah. So if you listen to this week's episode of Old Gamer's Almanac, you may have noticed that we had a big discussion about the game Balatro. That's an old discussion now, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Need to have it again.
Yes. I just want some updates from, and also, Son, sure. You didn't get to talk about it at all. Son, can we get your take on the card game Balatro? This has nothing to do with Space Cats, Peace Turtles anymore. All right. Nothing. This is just the expanded Horse House universe is what this is right now.
Well, I'm a horse that loves playing cards.
Yeah,
I'll tell
baby.
You that much. Balatro is, I have put in the least amount of time, but I tell you what, it grabbed me. I'm doing hand motions. It grabbed me.
Yes.
when I first played it. All I can say is I've been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth right now, like pretty extensively. I think Hunter thinks I'm in a race with him to make sure who gets done with the game first.
Oh, no, you're winning the race. Yeah.
I'm winning the race.
Yeah.
Unintentionally. And I would say that Bellatrix is a better game.
You heard it here, people.
It might be the best game that's ever been made that's not called chess.
It's true. High praise.
When they go down and say the greatest game, they're no longer talking about soccer, football, or whatever. They're talking about Bellatro.
Yeah.
This game is crack. It's good. If it ever makes it to my iPad, I'm doomed.
We're all doomed. We talked about that on the episode.
Because then it's on my phone, and then it's done. I'm going to have to question my marriage. I'm going to have to readdress a lot of things in my life because Bellatro could potentially take over, because all I need is it on a screen to touch it with my fingers, and that's the end of it. I may have to just get rid of all screens if it ever does.
If Local Thunk ever makes a chess roguelike, we're in trouble.
Oh, yeah. That's basically what it's really messed up.
Yeah.
It's funny that you bring up the phone thing, because I've been thinking about that a lot lately. And like, for example, last night I was at a comedy show here in Minneapolis, which I'm still very new to Minneapolis and Minneapolis comedy. There's a lot of people for me to meet that I've never met before. And I was hanging out, you know, like before my set, getting to know the other comedians on the show, which I love to do. I love comics and getting to know them. And I realized that in the future, when Bellatro is on the phone, I won't be talking to any of these people before my set. I won't be talking to anyone. I will just be sitting there playing Bellatro. I will take a 10-minute break to do stand-up comedy and then back to Bellatro. So I was like, I should really savor and enjoy this time.
Because every interaction we have with each other or anyone we love dearly, we should really savor it right now.
Right.
Because eventually they're going to move it to a touch screen and we're all doomed.
Or we start priming them for it now, you see? We start now with other things. We look down at See, I'm very good at not looking at my phone during conversations. However, I can get good at it, you know? Like, it's a skill that is, you know, nature versus nurture here.
Yes.
This is a nurtured sort of thing. I can nurture myself into this role of man who has phone in front of face at all times. I can be like I can get several phones even and like be like the Pokemon Go guy in Japan, you know?
Yes.
Lots of Bellatro going at the same time. I mean, think of the infinite gains
every suit you have, every number of every suit.
How do we multiply? What are the multipliers that we can do? How many phones can I get in front of my face? How many phones can I get in front of your face, listener? Buy. Buy this game. And
that's the vibe too, because I get those dudes at the stock market who are, you know, sell, buy. Mm-hmm, like Bellatro made it happen. I was like, oh, I get it now.
Right.
It's terrible. It's a great feeling though.
Yeah.
I get it. And I love it. I will never uninstall this game. It's gonna be forever installed on my Steam Deck. What is us? I mean, I don't even know why we even do OGA anymore. Now that this game is out, there's no point to talk about really any other game.
Right.
Bellatro GA.
Bellatro GA.
There we go. Yeah. BGA.
Bellatro Ga. It's called Bellatro
Gagas.
Bellatro Gagas.
Bellatro Gagas.
But
it is really, really fun. I really enjoy it. Wish I could have been on the episode with you all.
I wish that too.
So if you guys should go listen to it.
Well, hey, we sneaked you in to Space Cast Peace Turtles episode, so I think that works. Also, before we go, just in the interest of letting people know about the other things that we're up to, do y'all want to tell us anything about hockey? About maybe women's hockey in particular?
Horse House listeners should look on the horizon, because what is that I see? Two Sanders boys talking about the greatest sport ever made. It's us. Boys.
Yeah, it's us. Yeah, we're gonna do a little project, okay? This isn't for you if you're not a hockey person, all
right? Yeah.
But it could
and
be.
And a lot of you aren't. You know how I know a lot of you aren't? You're listening to Space Cats Peace Turtles.
Hey, I bet.
Listen, I don't want to project, all right? But there are some of you in here that do like it.
Hockey seems like a TI kind of sport, in my opinion. Like,
yeah, one of them, fast-paced. Maybe the fastest sport on the planet. TI, e-sport.
Right.
Not fast.
Not fast.
It's all
not
about
fast.
Balance, brother EJ. It's all about balance.
It's all about balance, yeah. To anyways, compensate for how slow the game, the board game is, they have to watch the fastest sport.
Even if you're not into hockey, you should really watch the PWHL. It's the Professional Women's Hockey League. It's a brand new league where the women actually get paid this time around, y'all. That's the good news about this league. Obviously, the leagues that came before them were also great if they, you know, had paid any of the people that played in them. That would be awesome. You should always fight for compensation for the work that you are doing, no matter what that work is. Just a PSA about that. But if you are looking for a foray into hockey at all in general, I think the PWHL is awesome, especially if you have a young child who is female identifying, then, you know, this is a great way. This is a great way to segue into the world of hockey and show them that, you know, we have a new sport out there, that it is for everybody. It's a sport that I've loved from a very young age, and I know Son picked it up about 15 years ago and has started loving it as well. I think we're just super excited to talk about it on a bi-weekly basis.
Bi-weekly.
Two weeks, so.
Yeah. That's a good way to start.
Yeah, and I think everyone will find a benefit from it. You know, who has ever been curious, or maybe like people who are like, I don't like sports, you know, that there's, sure, it's not my thing, but you've maybe wanted to have a sport, jump in, see if you like it. I'm definitely trying to bring, because I love like hockey history, and I'm definitely trying to capture a bit of that on my end of the puck boy spectrum. So yeah, join in, listen to us. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, I would. So I obviously don't really know much about hockey, but I had a really interesting time hearing about the WNBA from a Seattle comedian, Monica Nevy, who was on an episode of Best Thing Ever, probably about 6 months to a year ago. And it really kind of showed me, like, hearing her talk about the WNBA made me realize, like, oh, women's sports is kind of like the TI community of sports, basically.
Yes.
It's much more communal. It's much more like grassroots, and like really people really, really care. Not to say people don't care about, you know, like the NFL or whatever. Obviously, people really do care about that.
Whatever.
But it's a little more like you feel a more distinct connection to the other people that love the sport, if that
That's
makes
it.
Sense. Yeah.
You've nailed it. It's about, like you said, it's about finding those people. It's kind of like before a band goes like viral on TikTok,
because
that's all that happens. You know, it's like when you actually liked Pine Grove 10 years ago and no one else knew who Pine Grove was. Like,
and I still,
you know, 5 years. Well, that's great. If 5 years ago you came up to me and be like, oh yeah, Pine Grove is one of my favorite bands, I'd have been like, that's really cool, you know, or whatever. I'm only using them as an example because of their TikTok, you know, explosion. Right. But now if somebody came up to me and be like, oh, I like Pine Grove, I'd be like, okay.
Everybody likes
so
that.
So does everybody. Get in line. Yeah. You know, it's kind of how it feels. You feel defensive about it. But this it's not one of those situations. This is like, we want everybody, the more people you can get interested in a sport like this too. And like I said, a good foray into the sport in general, but also, like you said, that really communal feeling of talking about something that you can grow to love. And at the same time, like getting that same hit of dopamine from listening to other people talk about it and bouncing each other's ideas off it. It's such a new and young and fresh league. Like you're literally watching history be made. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that's the kind of point of view you have to start from. You have to realize that they are building something out, you know, they're starting from that ground level and they're building it out. It is kind of like TI in the way that you always start a TI game on your hexagon, and the only way forward is by moving and branching out.
So. Yeah, and you know, all of those people that love the NHL or the NFL or the MLB or the NBA, you missed the beginnings of that. You didn't get to see that. You weren't alive when that happened, unless you're like some sort of ancient, you know, angel like figure that lives forever or something.
Like Sun is,
like Sun. But excluding Sun, you didn't live through that, and you are living at the time that the PWHL is beginning. And if it's going to be an institution that's going to last 100 years, witnessing the beginning of that and being on at the onset of it, I think is a really interesting opportunity. And also one of the first teams is Minnesota. So yeah. Obviously I'm in. I'm bought all the way in. Okay. That's it. That's all I needed to know.
And I'll say it here. I'll give a little sneaky peek out to the
sneaky peek.
I'm also going to be joining on that Minnesota St. Paul
train. Yeah. Yes.
So I will see everybody up in the Great White North.
Yes.
Or our Great White North.
Yes.
Anyways,
that was the shame that was so funny. I wanted to just end on that, but I just want to explain what Sun is saying and say that you know, a horse house, I would say horse house is like 4.5 people. It's myself, it's Matt, it's Sun, it's EJ, and it's Root, when Root has time, basically. Mm-hmm. And most of us are gonna live in Minnesota. Really, it's just EJ, and we're just gonna make EJ come up to Minnesota a whole bunch.
I'm so sad that I live in, I mean, what can only be described as like a purgatory of sorts, where yeah. I kind of float through an endless veil that is draped upon my life, and
yeah.
all I can do, the only happiness I can glean, is that of my spawn and that of of those around me who make me whole, and yes, they are continually yes. ever moving further away from me, as if I am some sort of neon gas.
Right.
And as I go through the universe mm-hmm. and somehow repel those to Minnesota, while I am stuck in Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Arkansas.
In her vision. Her dream of Arkansas.
I'm stuck in the plight that she has wrought upon my land. I am dead. I'm dead inside. I am dead outside. I am continually blooming into a beautiful tree that is just, in spite of its surroundings, taking the little seeds from the soil and trying its best to claw its way upwards towards the sky.
Wow. That you unloaded.
I loved that.
I don't have a couch yet, EJ, but whenever I buy a couch, I will consult you about it. I'll be like, is this okay? Are you going to be okay with this one? Is this going to be fine? Because I'm imagining it's going to be a little bit like visitation. We're going to have you every other weekend. I'm going to want you every other weekend. So there you go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I got to stick them in my guest room whenever that gets done.
Yeah. See, well, yeah. I like how I'm volunteering my place, and like I'm the one with the one bedroom apartment, and I'm like, no, EJ's gonna have to stay with me.
Well,
I have to sleep on a couch.
He'll also have to go to Matt's.
EJ won't want
to Matt's.
No, EJ. Mm-hmm. EJ would hate a guest room.
If
he's gonna want my couch.
If I choose the couch, I'm gonna want the couch.
All right,
like,
you're
that's
choosing my couch.
Well, you know, you both have stayed on my couch, and I know you both love my couch.
Oh my god,
so
I do love your couch.
That will still be up there. It'll still be up there. So
wow, maybe I do. Wait, hold on. It's hard to compete with Sun's couch. We're gonna have to really find a good couch.
Maybe we'll get a cushion from each.
You're gonna have to spend $3,000 on a couch. I'm sorry.
Wow, that's ours is not that. It's IKEA, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Space Cats Peace Turtles, and thanks to Ben Prunty for the use of his music. You can find more at benpruntymusic.com and benprunty.bandcamp.com. Pax Magnifica, Bellum Gloriosum.